Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey, John Boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
Hello to a new adventure. Living my life in Michigan, my home state, surrounded by family and friends.
Columnist for MLB.com.
I usually am optimistic, right? That's not necessarily a surprise on your part, right?
MLB Network Insider.
That's an excellent thought there.
John, all of my questions are excellent, okay?
What is baseball going to do to enforce those rules?
That is a great question. Again, another great one, because they're all great.
Fox Sports Baseball contributor. Yeah.
Fox Sports Baseball God. John Paul Morosi.
I'm a God. I'm not the God.
John Morosi.
How about this for a homecoming?
With McNeil and Parkins on 670 The Score.
We do talk baseball, local, national, a little bit of both every Thursday at this time with MLB Network's John Morosi on the McNeil and Parkins Show. Danny Parkins has the day off. Mark Grody is on in relief today. John joining us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. John, this Cubs starting rotation just doesn't miss a beat, man. They pick up where they left off when they get back to work in Cleveland, and man, it's fun to watch them night after night. They are running away and hiding with this NL Central. Do you see that changing anytime soon?
Well, good afternoon, Dan and Mark. I've been incredibly impressed by the Cubs and candidly surprised. I did not think this was going to be a division-leading team or even a playoff team, at least back when we had five teams making the playoffs in each league. And the rotation was, to me, a great question mark. And now they've been so good that what Jose Quintana's role is going to be is a little bit of a question right now. That's how great they have been. And you're right, that having the layoff and missing the time, you had to wonder how they would bounce back after missing the weekend due to the postponements against the Cardinals. But you're right, the two great days in Cleveland, I was very impressed by the way they pitched there, and of course now coming home to face the Brewers. This is, to me, one of the more consistent rotations in the game. I'll be really curious to see Chatwood tomorrow, certainly after a lot of the moves that he has made and adjustments in the last couple years, just to get the ball in the strike zone more often. I think that's been a real key thing for the Cubs so far. Hendricks and his consistency, Mills coming in and being one of the more reliable fifth starters in the game. You simply can't say enough about just how consistent they've been, and I really think that's why the Cubs at this moment have the best record in baseball.
What are your early impressions of David Ross? Sorry, Groats.
Well, I think to me he's been excellent, and I in fact had a veteran player on the team just to voice to me that he's done a very good job of straddling that fine line between letting the players be themselves but also leading with a firm hand when needed. And that I believe is exactly what Theo and Jed had in mind when he was hired last offseason. That basically the team itself was still good, still a great roster, but that it was just time for a different voice and different tone. And David Ross, I had someone around the organization say this to me back in the fall, that he's got, of course, as you guys well know, one of the great people in the game, what a wonderful personality David has and how approachable he is, but he can be very firm when he needs to be. And the players there, the core of that team, Brian and Rizzo, they know it well because they live with him as they're first coming into the major leagues and around it. So, I mean, those guys understand what David Ross is all about. And I think it's incredibly impressive the way David has led. You really can't argue with anything he's done so far. The pitching, I think he has really handled that very well. So I think overall, he's done an excellent job, and you can't say enough great things about his leadership so far.
John, there is, in my opinion, nothing flukish about the Cubs' 12-3 start to the season. They're doing it legitimately with good starting pitching, defense, offense. I love the late inning runs. That was a trick the Cubs pulled off so many times back in 2016. But what I'm trying to figure out, and what I think a lot of baseball fans are trying to figure out, is how does one square this up with what's going on with the St. Louis Cardinals, a team that was perceived to be by many as the best team in the division going into this year, having done what they did last year? Are there credibility issues with this division, with baseball, and what's going on right now?
Well, Mark, I think to me, the Cardinals, first of all, we're hoping that they'll be able to play the doubleheader over the weekend. John Heyman's reported on that today, that perhaps tomorrow's going to be postponed, but that hopefully they'll be able to play on Saturday. You're right. It's obviously an ongoing concern. I think so many things that baseball wants to do this year, including, first of all, have a postseason. Maybe even at some point, no one has ever explicitly ruled out the possibility of there being fans in areas where COVID-19 is not circulating at a high level at a particular time, at a particular place, that maybe some teams could have fans. But you cannot really have that conversation until you have a couple solid weeks of health, of every team being able to play. And we're not there yet. We're not even there to be able to get the Cardinals back on the field yet. And we have to hope that even to have those conversations about what we want this to look like, you have to really have two full, I think, healthy weeks before then you really get that under you to think about what the future is going to look like. I think that the other key part, Mark, of this is how many games will eventually need to be the minimum to be able to qualify for the postseason. We don't know that yet. I think it's apparent to me 55 games in 45 days for the Cardinals, 10 doubleheaders. I just don't know that that's really going to be plausible at this point in time. So they're probably going to have to play fewer than 60 games. The question is, how many fewer than 60 can they play based on what you think is fair? And if they're not going to be able to hit that number, then the integrity question comes into play. If they can't hit the number, if you think the number is going to be 50, and if they keep missing games to the point that it's going to be 40 that they play, do they even play any games anymore? So those are the questions you start to have rhetorically about what is the value of competition, how many games must they play, mm-hmm. and at what point do you have to ask the tougher questions about that particular team. But I do think overall, Mark and Dan, I'll make this point, that the fact that other teams have not seen positive tests in recent days, to me, in its own way, validates the way that the league has been constructed right now without the bubble for the regular season. The playoffs are a different matter. But what has happened with the Cardinals, what has happened with the Marlins, has had zero effect on the Rockies, on the Giants, on the Mariners, on the Angels. It has been totally separate from them. And I think for right now, that's been a good thing. And we have to now just figure out what October will look like around the later part of September.
I suppose baseball has to start having these conversations, unlike our friends in the Big Ten, who didn't get around to talking about a possible winter, early spring season until a couple nights ago. Those conversations, I trust, are going on right now, John, about what will be the minimum number. I mean, they've got to, and I keep hearing people say baseball cannot afford one more interruption like this. Your thoughts on the first part of that and the latter statement as well?
I'll answer the latter stage first. I mean, I think that if a team has another outbreak on the level of the Marlins or the Cardinals, I don't think the league would respond any differently. I really don't. And in terms of you would isolate the team, you would postpone the team's games, and you would wait the certain number of days that you have to wait to make sure that it's healthy to begin playing again. I would expect that they would handle it the same way. And I think that the important thing to judge baseball on going forward is how have the Marlins handled things since they've come back, and then how do the Cardinals handle things once they come back, and how do the other teams handle things once inevitably there are positive tests elsewhere in the baseball ecosystem. I think it's been important that so far the Marlins have been able to play and at a, obviously from a competitive standpoint, play very well, but just more importantly, stay healthy. I do believe that there are conversations about what that number will be, but I don't think that the commissioner has settled on that number yet because he doesn't really have to. I think that the goal now is to play as many games with health that you can for as many teams. And then once you get to the second half of September, then you start having the conversations about, okay, well, we've got this team is on track to play X number of games. If most teams are on track to play 60 or close to it, and you've got a few teams that will play in the low 50s, then maybe you set the number at 50. If you have, unfortunately, multiple outbreaks that knock teams below that 50-game mark, then you have to probably recalibrate where that number is going to be. But I think the number right now, if you consider things staying on this trend, and we're about a quarter of the way through this, the number has a chance to be pretty close to 60 because enough teams have played enough games. Now, the other issue could be, of course, weather. And making up everything, whether it's a weather-related postponement or COVID-related, it's all going to be difficult because travel is restricted in some ways. We're trying to minimize it as much as possible. You have to be creative. And I think that the final point I'll make about the integrity of the schedule winning percentage, I realize that there may be some teams that are not happy if a team just clicks above 50 games or 52 games, whatever it is, and bumps them out of the playoff spot. But bear in mind, that's going to be the eighth-place team getting bumped out. And the eighth-place team would not have been making the playoffs in normal circumstances. So while they may complain about it rightfully, the reality is those sixth, seventh, and eighth spots were not really in existence until like 6 weeks ago. So I think we should bear in mind that there should be a minimum amount of complaining here because we're all just trying to get the games going, and that's the foremost concern. Any complaints about things that are not related to health, to me, are very secondary in the baseball world right now.
That's true. We should not take for granted what we have because baseball is actually being played. John, on the White Sox, they just took 2 out of 3 in Detroit, and they are definitely, relative to last year, an improved team, but still a young and exactly inconsistent team. That said, don't you think 10-9, their record right now, pretty much is who they are and have been and maybe will be this year, like hovering right around there?
I think so, and maybe even getting a little bit better. I think with the rotation, they've had a couple shocks to the system. Of course, not having Kopech, I think, was a significant loss. And so they've had to kind of reconfigure what their rotation is going to look like a little bit. And I think offensively, they'll find their groove even more and become better. I think it was a huge series this week in Detroit. You lose the opener. Keuchel comes out and says, I think, some very strong words that were warranted. That I think the important thing was he said it to the clubhouse first before he said it to the media. I think that was really important. He handled it the right way, and they bounce back and win two games. I think that the Tigers, for me, they've lost Crone now. Crone was so important to them this season. And so I think that Monday game in so many ways was crucial. The Tigers won the game, but they lost Crone. And their lineup, I don't believe, is going to be quite the same without him. And the White Sox bounce back and win the next two games. If the White Sox go back and make the playoffs, and I believe they will, you're going to go back to that game on the 10th of August, that Monday night, and say that was when it turned for the White Sox. I think that while they could have certainly been better than 10-9, they're right there in this thing with eight teams making the playoffs, the Indians having some turmoil right now with Clevinger and Plesac. I think overall the White Sox should feel very good about themselves because I believe their next 2 weeks, their next 3 weeks, and probably even their next 6 weeks, I believe will look better than that same period of time for Cleveland and for Detroit.
It's easy to say this a day after he goes 4-for-5 in that terrific first inning at bat from Tim Anderson, but God, they said this in the first inning yesterday, they are such a more exciting, more electric team when he's in their lineup, aren't they, John?
He really is. He's one of the great tone setters in the game in terms of energy and the way that he plays. You look at his OPS, certainly when he's been healthy, he's better than 1,000 right now. I think the one thing about Anderson that I love his energy, I love just the style that he plays, I love just everything he does at shortstop. He's a phenomenal player. And one of the reasons, to your point, why he is so important, and I've heard this from players on multiple teams in the game, given the way that the season is playing out without fans, the teams that play well are the teams that generate their own energy. I had somebody describe Mike Moustakas with the Reds as being an energy giver. Tim Anderson is an energy giver. He provides the energy that you used to get from 40,000. You get it from him. And I think that teams that have a player like him, and there are not many players like him in the game, I think we're going to see them withstand just the the tough nature of this season, and they're going to continue to play with energy and style and passion. And I think that when your first batter, the first batter of the game, does what Tim Anderson does consistently, you're going to have a very good season. And then you're going to have a game after game after game that's at a high competitive level. And we don't often talk about emotion and quote-unquote compete level like you hear about in hockey, but it matters now in baseball, and Tim Anderson has that.
Dylan Cease, we mentioned him a little bit earlier. Last night, he goes six innings, allows five runs on seven hits, five strikeouts, didn't walk anybody, the proverbial, you know, one bad inning. And, John, I don't have a good hold on Dylan Cease at this point because he's that guy who everybody says has the great stuff. Steve Stone said that he was showing, you know, top of the rotation stuff in the preseason this year. And we've seen those stuff guys in the past, and it doesn't always play out. I remember Gavin Floyd with the White Sox. He was a stuff guy, and he just never peaked out. Have you been able to figure out Dylan Cease, and should there just be more patience for a guy that appears to have the skill set that he does?
I think he needs more time, and I think those are all great observations about kind of what he brings. And I think that the fact that he was able to stay in there, and to me the key number last night was, or yesterday afternoon was the low number of walks. Because if he's in the zone, if he's not walking guys, yes, he's more of a fly ball guy than a ground ball guy. But if he's not walking guys, he's going to win a lot of games because he'll get the run support. And if you can find a way to, even as you give up some runs, to stay in the ball game and be able to rest the bullpen, that's like a veteran start what he had this week. He was able to go deep into the game without having his A stuff, giving up some runs, but stayed in there, got the win, kept the bullpen from having to get involved in the fourth inning. I think those types of starts, I think, reflect very well on a pitcher. And again, if you're going to tell me that the walk numbers will be low for him, I think I would take, if the start is six innings with zero or one walk, I think Dylan Cease and the White Sox together are going to win a lot of baseball games.
Can they catch the Twins?
It's going to be a challenge, but it's well within reason, I think. And part of it is that the Twins, with their rotation, I think when Berríos pitches, they've obviously got one of the best pitchers in the game from a stuff standpoint on the mound. And Dobnak has been incredible. He's one of the great stories in baseball. Love what Dobnak has done. Really remarkable undrafted free agent to now being the ERA leader. But I think that for me, the Twins' rotation is not far and away better than what the White Sox have, in my judgment. And I think if the White Sox could just play consistently and bring that same level of I think overall starting pitching stability going forward, I think they've got a fine chance to catch the Twins. And I am an optimist in a huge way, only being now two games back of the Twins. I think they've got plenty of schedule left. And I really believe, guys, I believe it very firmly, the White Sox are a playoff team. I think they're going to make it there. I believe the Tigers will come back down to earth a little bit. The Indians will as well. And I think that the top two teams, based on what I've seen so far, it wasn't the way that I maybe envisioned it to begin the year, but right now I think it's on the field at the moment. The Twins and the White Sox are the two best teams in this division.
Were you pleasantly surprised? Go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say about the Indians, and you kind of alluded to it earlier with the Clevinger Police Act thing. It doesn't look like, you know, teammates are coming out and being pretty hard on those guys. It's not out of the question. I don't know if you agree with this or disagree with it. That moment and those two guys might ruin their season in a 60-game season.
Well, it certainly knocked the whole team sideways. I mean, that's what it looks like right now. They're just not the same group. I mean, they lost 7-1, 7-2 to the Cubs. And Adam Pletko's comments after the game on Tuesday, I thought were very firm that basically they're both going to have to re-earn the trust of this room. They're now both on the restricted list. This is a significant distraction. That's 40% of your rotation. And really, the identity of your club is your rotation. Lindor really hasn't gotten going yet. And I think, too, that one of the really delicate aspects of this team is that everybody that's around that team knows a couple things. Number one, you've got a manager who is just away from the team for health reasons for a week. You have to be careful here. This is a real-life situation. Carlos Carrasco had leukemia last year. This is about, you know, being a great teammate, looking out for each other. It really is difficult to square – that, you know, violating the protocols that they have now in the baseball bubble for Tier 1 people with what has happened now and what their people in their own clubhouse have been going through for a long time. But the other thing that cannot be, I think, overstated is they have a very narrow window of time to win with Lindor. And if you fall out of this thing in the next 2 weeks, do you trade him? And once you've traded him, it's really hitting a reset on the entire organization. And with the Cleveland Indians, it's all so precarious. If they're pitching well and Lindor is hitting and Ramirez is hitting and Santana's hitting, they're as good as anybody in the league, in my opinion. But if you take away those two guys from the rotation for a while and Lindor hasn't been himself, really, what do you have then? You've got a mediocre team. And we've seen it before that a mediocre team in that market means that guys get traded. And that is, to me, one of the toughest parts about this, because they've got so many great people in that organization who have done all the right things, that for this to happen to them and in the midst of their team, I think has a chance to be devastating. And I think they may not be. They have to prove it to us otherwise now, but they may not quite be the same team for the balance of the year that they was for the first 2 weeks because of what happened there with Clevinger and Plesac.
John, we always enjoy your company, enjoy your enthusiasm about baseball, but you really light up when talking about college football, in particular Michigan football. For guys who love the game, I feel bad for you. I'm an NFL guy. I love college ball too, but I'm an NFL guy. My heart goes out to those of you who love college football as much or more than any other game, because you got to get your head around the idea of your old friend ain't going to be there for the first time in your life.
Right. Well, it's tough news. Obviously, the number one thing, like we talked about with baseball, and I'll say this, I think college football, just because of the nature of college sports, collegiate life, it is a fundamentally different enterprise than baseball is, than pro sports, because of the obviously the athletes in pro sports are getting paid and those in college are not. We don't quite have time to litigate that full discussion right now. But I think that to me is it should not be a case if baseball is being played, then college football should be played automatically. I don't think it's necessarily the same thing. I also think this, and I've learned this the last couple of weeks like we all have, I am grateful that we have baseball today. And I'm grateful that tomorrow I'll be at Wrigley. Like that to me, and covering a game. That to me is special, and I'm grateful for it. And if when we have college football again, if it's in March or April, I'll be grateful for it then. We can't wish for things that we don't have right now. You've got to be grateful for what you've got in front of us, whether it's family or sports, and take it one day at a time. And if it's Michigan-Ohio State on Memorial Day weekend, hey, I'll be happy to have it then. I think that to me is what we've all learned the last few weeks, few months, during all this, and it's probably going to be the case now for the next little bit to come as well.
It's a good perspective. John, thanks a bunch. We'll check in with you again next Thursday. Take care. Have a good weekend. Enjoy.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for the conversation, as always. And as always, your great questions as well. They were great again today.
Thanks, John. Take care. John Morosi from MLB Network with us for national perspective on our locals. And he's going to have the treat of being Wrigley Boy this weekend for Cubs and Brewers. Ron Coomer gets that treat every yes, he really likes that. Yes.
That was awesome.
He's definitely channeling his inner Tanya Babich.
Bob Costas.
Yeah.
Coronado.
Yeah, we'll keep talking baseball throughout the course of today's show. We're a little bit short for Zach Zaidman's Cubs and Brewers pregame show tonight, 5:15. We'll check in with NHL Hall of Famer Dennis Savard in about 15 minutes, get his thoughts on the Hawks and their chances against the Las Vegas Golden Knights. It's the second game in their best-of-seven first-round series tonight in Edmonton. Savvy's coming up at around 3:40 today. Grody's in for Parkins. I'm Mac. Thanks for listening to the Score Sports.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage
to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Radio 670. Glad you're with us on this gorgeous Thursday afternoon in Chicagoland. My name's Mac, Mark Grody from his Streeterville abode, sitting in for Danny Parkins today. As we continue to mend after some recent losses, Grody, with our show's show pot, we have almost $1,900 in our wagering account, and I'm looking at opportunities for tonight. With locals, there are just two games of note, and that would be the Cubs, and they're a big favorite over the Brewers. The Blackhawks are big underdogs in Game 2 against the Las Vegas Golden Knights. And that game, thank you, Crazy Dave, for the reminder, that is an afternoon game. I keep saying tonight. Yeah, they are playing that puppy at 4:30 our time. So Hawks and Knights at 4:30. The Hawks are plus 175 in the game, but they have adjusted the total just a tick. The Blackhawks' last two games have gone under. Their totals had been 6.5. It's sitting at 6 for this late afternoon contest in Edmonton, Alberta. Grody, do you have a lean on any of those plays, whether it's the Cubs at minus 170 tonight with Darvish against Brett Anderson, or the Hawks getting 175? That means you get $175 on a $100 bet as the underdog, or more than 6 goals. Do you have any leans whatsoever on those investment opportunities, sir?
I don't speak gambling, but I will tell you what is going to happen in the Blackhawks game. They are actually going to win the game tonight. 4-3 is going to be the final score for whatever it's worth, because the Blackhawks are not going to have a 10-minute period in the first period where they don't get a shot off against Robin Leonard. So that is going to happen. The Blackhawks will win by a final score of 4-3. I think the Brewers are cooked, man. I think they're cooked. I think Darvish is going to play well tonight. I think the Cubs are going to have the exact same score tonight against Cleveland that they had, or I should say against Milwaukee, that they had against Cleveland last night. 7-2, the Cubs will beat the Brewers. So you could take those numbers and put them into your gambling world right now if you would like. So there you go. 7-2 Cubs and 4-3 Blackhawks. I'm full homer as I sit on my couch in my Streeterville abode, as you just said.
See, I do the same thing. I'll bet against the Bears because there's a big part of me that enjoys seeing the Bears not cover.
I'm not there yet.
Yeah, you will be.
You know I'm not there yet.
Little more time. Little more time. Yeah, you'll find out where all the bodies are buried. Or I could take.
Yeah, I don't know where any bodies are buried.
Yeah, once you learn that, it's difficult to just know too much. But not that way with the Hawks. The Hawks, and I found that out about the White Sox the other night. Parkin says, man, you're a homer. All we do is play the Cubs and Sox. And I said, you're right. All right. I said, let's not play the Sox. He goes, well, let's play the Tigers. So we played the Tigers, and the Sox beat their ass. And before the first pitch was thrown at Comerica Park, I texted all the guys on the crew, and I said, I'll never effing do it again. I feel like a turncoat. I don't want the $75 enough to see the White Sox win. I would get no joy out of that bet. Because the Sox can make the playoffs here. Hell, Morosi thinks the Twins' starting rotation isn't really that much better if it is than the White Sox rotation. Now, they're a more potent offensive club. They hit more homers than any team in baseball history last year. So I struggle to bet against the teams that are nearest to my heart, and those two teams are the Blackhawks and the White Sox. Even though I admit I'm a fair weather White Sox fan, I'm not going to bet against their asses. I don't have that in me, and I was actually glad I had that realization. That means I'm still fan enough,
right,
to not have that in me. I thought I was well past that with everybody except the hockey team.
Well, it's really hard with the Blackhawks to make a straight case that they're going to win. But in the Cubs case, like Brett Anderson and his 5.40 ERA, Yu Darvish and his 2.12 earned run average coming into this game, the Cubs playing as they are, doing it legitimately, they're back home, 1-8 of 9, everything is like coming up Cubs. Like we talked about at the beginning of the season, a lot of us did, about what kind of interesting things will happen in a 60-game season, who will get the breaks, who will have the most advantages. It turns out the Chicago Cubs that they have, and they have taken advantage of everything, having one of their top competitors, the Cardinals, non-existent mm-hmm. to this point in the baseball season. As far as the Blackhawks are concerned, yeah, man, I mean, they do have to – it's funny, like what Robin Leonard – I got a great quote here from Robin Leonard. He says, quote, "I know a lot of Chicago's tendencies – and know what they're trying to do on the power play, but it becomes a little bit of reverse psychology. I knew they were going to mix it up on me in game one, and on all the in-tight chances they tried to go five-hole. I kind of anticipated that before the game. Next game, they'll probably try something else." So, and I think that'll be the case, right? I mean, Jeremy Colliton, I know that, you know, some people don't think he's a great coach, but I think that's an obvious thing that, okay, these are things that have to change. There are obvious adjustments which need to be made. Yeah, pound for pound, that is a deeper, better team than the Blackhawks, but there are adjustments that the team can make to help them win today. You think they're going to win, or am I crazy?
I never predict hockey games. All I do is root. It is the most impossible thing to predict in all of sports is a hockey game. It just I've learned not to do that over the years. I just bet and bet on the team that I love, and that's the Blackhawks. And one of my favorite players in franchise history, Dennis Savard, is going to give us his thoughts on this afternoon's second game in the series in a few minutes on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Here comes Glenn Anderson. Pass knocked down by Savard. Skates through center, ragging the puck. Savard still has it around Tikkanen. Around low, shoot, scores! What a goal by Dennis Savard!
Maintenant Savard, et enfin Schott et Robinson qui suivent. Denis Savard, belle accélération, quel beau jeu. Et voici qui s'avance un peu plus loin, et le but!
Très beau jeu.
Denis Savard, absolument superbe.
Love that highlight. Conference Finals 85. Savvy against that great Edmonton Oilers dynasty team. The Hawks gave them fits before finally going down. And I've enjoyed a couple of times where I've actually attempted to speak French to the Hall of Famer, the legendary Blackhawk, former centerman and ambassador who joins us right now on the Alpamonte Ford. Good afternoon, Denny. How you doing, man? Ça va?
Mac, I'm doing good. Denny, thank you for having me. Great. Thank you very much. Hope everybody's healthy and doing well as well.
We are doing terrific, and you know, very, very happy the Hawks are here and got past the Edmonton Oilers in that qualifying round series. It was an unexpected treat when the season stopped. They weren't a playoff team, but they played well enough to get here. So, my God, I'd love to see them play better than they did the other night in the opener, and yet they hung tough for two periods. But that's where you're not in the hanging tough business against a good hockey team. What would you like to see them do a little bit differently to try to get some better scoring opportunities tonight, or should say late this afternoon against Las Vegas?
Yeah, you know, Vegas played very well. Let's give them a lot of credit. But, you know, I would can't forget what our guys have been through in the first series. We beat a team that was very skilled and very fast and one of the best players in the league with McDavid. So that being said, of course, we're playing a team that's also skilled and fast and now big. Bigger than Edmonton. So to me, when I watched game one, I watched a team, the Knights, that are very aggressive on their forecheck, and they were able to battle some of our D's down low. and keeping pucks alive and keeping pucks, you know, puck possession in their own zone for quite a while. So I would tend to tell our guys, for me anyway, I'm looking outside looking in. It's easy from where I'm sitting now, but I would tell our wingers that have to do a really, really huge job today to really be good on the walls. Because I would say to our D, you know, we can't let these guys come up on us as fast as they are and as big as they are. So we might need to wrap pucks around the boards. It's the old way, but in the sense that you create races against them. So, you know, if you're able to get the puck out of your zone and play in their own zone, and at the same time for us offensively, when we make contact on our forecheck with the Knights, if we don't get possessions right away, I would bring our Ds down on the walls to keep pucks in case it has to be coming on the wall. So there's a lot of tactics going on, and obviously, you know, there's a lot of different ideas. I'm not sure that mine would work, but that's what I would try to do. You can't – a team like the Knights, you know, if you play in their hands, you're going to have a lot of trouble. You're going to be in trouble a lot of nights. So – you know, we just need to be more aggressive, I think. I mean, especially in their own zone, to get on the forecheck and keep pucks in. And once we get possessions, we're a very good team at it. We saw that in the first series. So we'll see what happens. But, hey, they're a good team. They're the number one seed in the West for a reason. They did a great job in the qualifying rounds. And so, you know, interesting game. But hopefully that today will be a better night than we did the other night. But, again, you know, like you said, we were in the game pretty much the whole time. You know, the third period got away from us, but let's see what happens.
Hey, Dennis, I love that idea that you mentioned of creating races in this game, sort of, you know, roll the dice and see what happens. You also mentioned playing their game, the Vegas game, that if you do that, you're going to be in trouble. So that said, for a period and a half in game one, it was scoreless, and to the point where I thought, okay, the Blackhawks might be able to steal one. But keeping it stagnated to that point, was that playing into Vegas's style, where they were able to just kind of hold off and toy with the Blackhawks and then ultimately explode? Is that what happened? What happened after a period and a half
the other night, you know, in game one? Game one's always a feel game. You know, you can't dwell on it, but you get a lot of experience out of that game. You know, as a coaching staff, I'm sure Jeremy and his staff have looked at it. And, you know, we only play Vegas three times, and I'm sure every team's a little different now. Even us, we're way better than we were in the season, and that's great to see. Our kids are coming on really well. So, you know, you have to look at after game one and, you know, kind of evaluate everything and make a decision and, you know, go for what your gut, what you feel like you need to do to try to counter against them. But I know for a fact that the Knights are a big team. You know, they're strong. I mean, they've got a lot of players on that team that's over 6 foot and 220 pounds. So once you get a battle with them with the puck, I don't care how big and how strong you are on the puck, the big guy's going to win that battle. So we want to eliminate that as much as we can in our own end. At the same time, once the puck is rimmed, if they start deciding to come down on our wingers are going to have to be strong on the wall, you know, to get the pucks out and create races. I mean, that's what I see. I think our power play has proven in the first round that if we get our opportunities, we'll be okay. So, you know, it's and the other thing I see, too, because, you know, they like to carry the puck in a lot, and the Knights does, but at the same time, they throw pucks in deep as well. So Crow's going to have to be playing a lot of pucks, in my opinion, and you know, be sharp back there to play a lot of pucks during the course of the game.
Some people don't consider that a very sexy, you know, brand of hockey savvy, but when it's done right, it's just a different form of art, in my opinion. Seeing teams that'll plaster your ass against the glass and dig for pucks and create jams in front of the net, that's hockey too, man.
Yeah, and you know, like what happened with the Knights the other night, if they always, obviously they have two guys on the puck hard pretty much, and they kind of came up with quite a few pucks. And they have a guy in a high slot that's located like in an area where he's very tough to get. So our guys did a good job as far as, you know, defending him that way. But what happens then, it opens up their appointments. Some of their defensemen are open. And then from there, you know, they get traffic. They got big screens in front of Crow. I guess tougher for our goaltender, and you know, that's how I saw the first game. Now, did they play like this throughout the whole You know, the first couple games, I didn't really watch them. I watched a lot of games throughout the first week, but I didn't really get to watch Vegas. So, you know, there's a lot to be taken off that game. You know, I would remind our guys, hey, we beat the Oilers. We beat a good team, good, solid hockey team. I know Vegas is a good team as well. So let's play our best here, and let's do our best tonight, this afternoon, and hopefully that, you know, we get out of here with the win. And you know, this is a try to get the momentum back, really.
We saw 5 years ago that when he's right, Brandon Saad can be a huge difference maker. Stevie Conroy was on with us recently. He says, and then there's times when he just wants to be east and west, and he's just kind of he gets outside of what he does best from time to time. Whether he were a teammate of yours or if you were a coach and you were working with Brandon Saad, what would you do with him, say to him, to try to maximize what? Because when he's right, he's really valuable. But when he's doing those weird ass things, Savvy, he's a detriment more than he is an asset.
Yeah, well, he's a good player. I like him a lot. I really do. I think yeah, certain times he'll show, like, you know, really, really well, and some other time not as well. But you watch the other night when he created that goal. This is the type of player he is. He's a guy that's going to be gritty. He's going to win one-on-one battles. He's a big guy, you know. He's a six-foot player with probably over 200 pounds. So he has to play that strong game. He has to be good on the pucks. He has to be the guy that's going to win battles in the corners versus their defense, and he's going to be one of the guys for us that's going to, you know, front the goalie a lot of times. So, but I like Sauter. He's, you know, he's a player that could really help you, and he's helped us, you know, to win the last cup. And obviously, since he's been back, he was having a decent year this year. You know, I know expectations are always a lot bigger when people look at dollar signs for Sauter, but you know, he's a North-South player. That's got skill too. Don't get me wrong. He does have skill, because when he gets the puck and he drives wide with it and goes around the D, he's good at that. So these are the things for me. Focus on winning your battles, and focus when you get the puck wide, drive wide with it and take it to the net. That's the type of guy. That's when he had success, and the games he's been successful, that's what he did. And the other night, you know, it was a great example. I know it was a short-handed situation, but he stripped the puck from I think it's Theodore, but and then, you know, Camp got the puck and went in and scored. So, you know, that's the type of player he is, and I think, you know, I'm sure he's reminded that by the coaching staff. You have to be, you know, in the playoffs especially, you have to really bring your game, what you are as a player, your role, whatever your role is. You have to be, you know, step out of your comfort zone at times for anybody, and that's playoffs, and everybody has to do it. I mean, Vegas is a big team. We're going to have to step out of our comfort zone as players here to try to beat them. But mm-hmm. I'm not giving up on our guys. We know that, you know, what we did in the first round, we've been playing well, and hopefully this afternoon it'll be what we saw, you know, the first couple games of that series against the Oilers.
Savvy, last thing today, and it's not about this series, but it's a question I've really wanted to ask you for a while now. We just haven't had many chances to talk over these last few months. What does Jeremy Roenick have to do to gain membership in the NHL's Hall of Fame? It seems ridiculous that JR does not have a place in Toronto.
Yeah, you should be there. We all know that. You know, it's a great question by you and JR as a friend and a guy that teammate of mine for many, many years. I know he's a great person. He scored over 500 some goals in the NHL.
Yes, he did. I know. Played a lot of grit. Don't convince somebody, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that are not in that should be, and I'm so happy that Dougie Wilson got in this year. I mean, that was a long time waiting, too, and there's Steve Larmer, too. But, you know, there's a lot of difficult decisions, a lot of choices to make when it gets to the Hockey Hall of Fame. And for sure, you know, when you look at JR, he should be in there. I think it's just a matter of time. No question about it.
Savvy, you're in there, damn it. And that 18 hangs from the rafters at the United Center for a very good reason. You were the reason to come to the rink for many, many years when the team wasn't going so great. Always loved chatting with you. Thanks so much. Enjoy the game this afternoon, bud.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care. Have a great day, and go Hawks.
You got it, buddy. Take care. Denny Savard, good old number 18. Savoir faire. Mon ami, Savvy. Oh, he was exciting to watch.
Spinorama!
Yeah, he was a terrific player. For those of you Hawks fans of more recent vintage, Patrick Kane would be a guy you could liken him to. He had terrific hands, terrific speed, and just made stuff happen. The guys who skated on with him were better players because of it when he was playing the game at a very, very high level. We got a couple of interesting developments regarding the Cubs we're going to get to in our final hour of the show, and Zach Plesac has spoken. We'll share those thoughts with you, as well as Ron Coomer, coming up in just a few minutes on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.